they went through the Second World War, then things picked up. They had work for everybody, see? And they found a job for me right away. And I was in this box factory, putting strings through hat boxes for Woodward's, and I nearly went nuts. So I quit, and I went down to unemployment, and she said, we're going to fix you labor job jumpers, see? And then I went down, I got a job at the corner of Princess and Hastings in the Home Apple. I worked there, then I quit there and went to the Hotel Vancouver and the laundry there, and I worked there. And I was an experienced laundry worker because when I went to the Reform School, they put me in the laundry. And I learned there, see? So when I went to the Hotel Vancouver, I had all that experience. I worked there quite a while. And
was that unionized? Was the laundry workers unionized?
No. That's then I go, Christ, the Hotel Vancouver let you be in a union.
They're unionized now.
Yes. Yeah, you betcha. after the, Relief Camp boys came in, and they were selling apples on the street. And also, there was the university students who graduated those years, an awful lot of them find jobs. So a delegation of them went to see R.B. Bennett, the then prime minister. And he told them, they presented their case and told them they had no work and no jobs. And he said, no jobs, he said. You're too fussy. Go out and do pick and shovel work like I did. That's what he told them. And in the meantime, the boys came in from the relief camps and they were selling apples on the street and taking up collections. And then they weren't getting anywhere and they decided to occupy the art gallery. So they went in to the art gallery for a while. First of all, they went to the library at Main and Hastings and they occupied that for a bit. And then they went in the library. And then they went to the art gallery. And finally, they landed in the post office. And they stayed in the post office for 3 weeks. And one Sunday morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, the mounted police came and they tear gassed them out of the post office. And as they went down Hastings there, they smashed a few windows on their way down, and they were gassed, and they landed at the Ukrainian Labor Temple at the corner of Pender and Kiefer, Pender and Hawks, I forget which. And at the same time, there was a doctor's convention in the city, and there was two American doctors went down to the labor temple and they treated the ones that were for tear gas, and they refused to give their names. And a short time after that, the war broke out, and the government had all kinds of money. Then the money was, and all of a sudden, from being relief bums, they turned into heroes. And there was all kinds of money for them, and they went overseas. And nothing, they had a local politician from a provincial government, Ian McKenzie was his name, and he made a speech and he said, there's nothing too good for the heroes from Anzio and Salerno, because they were all over in Italy fighting. That's as true as I tell you. after the post office episode, or before, that they marched 1,000 of them, and they all had the government-issue khaki sweaters on, and they marched to the old forum, and I think Arnold Webster was. If you get the NDP paper, you can see Daisy Webster's column. Well, it was Arnold Webster that spoke to them, and I think Stuart Ellsbury, but I'm not sure. But Webster had addressed them anyway. See, and that was just before. I think things, and that is the reason that the unemployed insurance was brought in 43, because they didn't want any more of that going on. See?
Were you involved in any of those marches? Were you present for them?
No. I wasn't in any of them, see. But my husband was on his way to work that Sunday morning, and he saw them running. But it was in all the papers. So you can go to the Sun Archives and look that up.
When the unemployed organizing began, what did the organizers do to begin to bring men and women together who were unemployed? Did they leaflet places where people would eat or stay?
They made the unemployed councils. They formed unemployed councils in all the different departments. This was before the CCF. And we had unemployed councils in all the rooming houses and that in the East End. And they organized a chairman and a recording secretary and whatever else they did.
Did they approach the trade unions to support?
No, trade unions, I don't know. We didn't hear much about them. We're inclined to be reactionary. They weren't like they are today because there was too many trade unions out of work. They were all out of work, same as everybody else. You haven't a clue to what it was like.
True.
No, you can't even... can you imagine your father and mother going up to the relief office with a gunny sack to get your food? Well, that's the way it started. And that was the worst thing. They call it the Great Depression. But Marx said each one is worse than the one that went before. They had one in 1914 before the First World War. They had one in 1907. And they had one, I don't know about Canada, but 1894 they had Cox's army, unemployed army marched on Washington. At that time, see? And the only thing that saved the states then, as Roosevelt, they said he saved capitalism.
Right. True. We've talked a bit about the role of the church specifically. Can you talk about how the church was seen in your community and the kind of role that it played in people's lives, and in particular, what attitude it had towards trade unions or labor organization?
Well, I can't say anything about the trade unions because I don't remember too much about them.
The church?
I don't remember the church because I never went to it. But I think the Catholic Church was more in sympathy with the people. Not the bishop, the ordinary priest was, but... mostly what I remember about the church was Rodden, the Reverend Andrew Rodden, at the first United Church at Gore and Hastings there. It's a new church now, yeah. See? But he was busy preaching about what was going on behind the green curtains. That was the beer parlors. And they used to have it curtained off with green curtains or something. But he did go down to, you see, before they put them in the relief camps, as the loggers were all laid off of work and their meal tickets were used up and the hotels couldn't carry them any longer, then they sent them to what they call, they gave them a ticket to what they call the refuge. And they went down there, see, to go. And then those that didn't go there went over to the flats, the False Creek Flats, they called it then. And they built makeshift places to live. Like old, they'd get tins from old cars and boards, and they made themselves places to sleep, you know. And Andy went down there. We all called him Andy. And we Andy went down there, and he brought down sacks of bread, and he had his picture taken handing out the loaves of bread to the unemployed.
Wasn't that sacrilegious?
Huh?
Where did they
Well, we just laughed at Andy, you know, the left wing, they just laughed at him, see? And once in a while we went and listened to him preaching, especially when he got going on what was going on behind the green curtain, see?
Once did your father do?
Carpenter.
And was he in a trade union?
Oh, yes, he was always a trade unionist. All the carpenters were, the skilled workers.
And he had a fairly strong, he had a strong position on picket lines, did he?
Yeah, but he wasn't any different than all the trade, than all the carpenters and skilled tradesmen at that time. They were all union people. They still are. They all belong to the union. See?
Can you tell me this story about your father talking to your brother about not crossing picket lines?
Yeah, it was the strike in 1923, the longshore strike. And somebody got him to go down on the boat or something.
In 1935, the unemployed went by freight train to Ottawa. Can you talk a little bit about the On to Ottawa trek and then the Regina riot?
No, I don't. At that time, I wasn't too involved because I was in the I was working at the CCF, but they had a trek to Ottawa, and then the Mounties tackled them with the Regina. And not a lot of people are of the opinion that there was some skullduggery, there were two pigeons or something. Lots of people think that the Mounties cooked them up themselves.
Okay. There was an election in 1933. Can you talk a bit about that election in which Duff Petullo and Wisborne ran?
Yes, Duff Petullo and Gordon Wisner, who was later the Attorney General, they were the leaders of the Liberal Party, and right in the depth of the Depression, when it was absolutely impossible to get work of any kind, the Liberal Party came out with the slogan, Work and Wages. And that was the year that Harold Winch got elected to Parliament.
In terms of the welfare system, you mentioned that welfare had something called husband catchers. Who were these people and what did they do?
Oh, well, that was a terminology that the unemployed had when they went up, to, if they were married and separated and they went up to collect their relief, well, if they, they'd send them up to, and the, everybody called them the head, the husband catchers, and it was a, well, I guess he was some kind of a social worker. They went up to see them, and then they tried to trace the husband. And if they could find him, they'd take him to court and get a judgment against them. But lots of times, the woman, the wife, would be off welfare, and find out that she couldn't collect anything from, she'd only be able to collect once from her husband, and then he'd disappear again. But the relief didn't care as long as they got her off relief.
Also, were there social workers who worked with the relief office? And what were they like in those days?
Yes, they had social workers in those days. But the one in the East End in particular, nobody had any use for her. She came down to see my girlfriend one day, and she told her that her husband has a real good job in Seattle, and she's going to send her and the two kids to Seattle to meet her husband. And so the lady didn't want to go. She wanted no part of it. So the social worker came down this day. She said, come on, she said, I'll take you out to breakfast. So she took her out to breakfast and bought her a package of cigarettes. So the lady thought, uh-oh, something fishy's coming. So she went up to the social worker took her up to the immigration place. And so when she went in to get her medical, she said to the examining officer or the examining doctor, she said, do I have to go to Seattle? And he said, don't you want to go? And she said, no. He said, well, who's that out there with you? And she said, she's the social worker. And he said, I thought she was a social worker. And he said, lady, there's no power on earth can make you leave the land of your birth. So she came out, and the social worker says, you cooked your goose. You cooked your goose good. So the lady started crying. She came home, and everybody told her, oh, stop crying. You've got small kids. They can't. They won't be able to put you off the leave. They can't. See? And the teacher spoke very well of her, that she kept her kids nice and clean and everything. And that was the end of that.
But they did cut people off welfare if they thought somehow that they could afford to support themselves.
Oh, yes, sure. But as a rule, the people went off themselves. They didn't want the welfare if they could get any kind of a job, because they didn't want them social workers chasing them.
After the Depression, was it because they went for patriotic reasons?
Well, they might say it was, but it wasn't. It went because they were going to get a paycheck and get some clothes to wear were better than what they were, the government issued, or the GI clothes were better than what they were wearing. And
Yes, you're watching on the news, you know, and yes.